Welcome to the Employer Chronicles with your hosts, Rick Grimaldi and Laurie Armstrong-Halber, attorneys at Fisher Phillips, specializing in management, labor, and employment law. The opinions expressed on this program are solely that of the hosts. This is not legal advice. If you do want legal advice, please consult with a lawyer. Now, here's Rick and Laurie.
So today we are going to talk about manufacturing, and I'm so excited, Rick, we have a guest with us. We have Michael Pearson from Union Packaging, who is a client and good friend, and who was the inaugural recipient of the Fisher Phillips Business Leadership in Diversity Award. And I want to thank Mike for being here with us today. A couple words about Mike. He started a company called Union Packaging in 1999. Now, Rick, have you ever been to, I don't go there, but McDonald's or those kinds of places, Wendy's?
I won't admit to going there publicly.
Well, you're familiar with the concept.
I am.
All right. So you know the cool little containers that your French fries come in,
sure.
And sometimes they're like themed if there's a movie or something,
yes.
Promotional.
That's Mike.
What Mike Pearson makes.
Cool.
And so he is here with us today. He had left a important corporate America type job to found Union Packaging in 1999. And has been leading it ever since. So you invited Mike to come in and talk about manufacturing with
us. Well, the timing couldn't be better, right? In terms of where we are now and in 2017, and I think what we hope to see is a resurgence in manufacturing. I'll kick this off, Mike. It's good to see you. Obviously, manufacturing's been challenged in the recent past anyway. What were your biggest challenges, or what do you think the biggest challenges facing manufacturers has been in the last, say, 10 years?
Well, first of all, I'm not going to offer any earth-shattering conclusions. We all know that offshoring has been a problem that has victimized a lot of the heavy industry I grew up with, especially in the Philadelphia region, Bud, Sunship. We've seen those jobs offshore, and they've offshored for a variety of reasons. It's largely they found more competitive and fertile ground, and a term we use frequently now but seldom defined, basically globalization or the flattening of the world, has opened up opportunities to manufacture in areas where it simply is more competitive, and it's not just about labor.
That's interesting. That's going to continue, I would think, right? It's kind of hard to reverse globalization at this point, despite, I think, what some might like to do.
That's very true. We are not going to see a rush to return to heavy manufacturing to the United States. The opportunities will be in niche, specialized manufacturing.
Like yours.
Like mine, and even more developed than what I do, supporting biotech, which the metropolitan Philadelphia region has a rich future in terms of merging engineering and manufacturing with pharmaceuticals. That's an opportunity that they will have. But in terms of the sweaty, gritty manufacturing post-World War II, we are living in a fantasy if we think that's reshoring.
Is that necessarily a bad thing?
It is not a bad thing, because given what we excel at as a country, and that's technology, it's a la Silicon Valley, the type of manufacturing we're going to be doing is white coat. It isn't dirty and gritty, and we really are tapping into our strengths as a nation and region. However, the have-nots, or the left-behinds, are going to find it very difficult to participate in that economy without the education.
So what do we do to get people retrained or trained up, as the case may be? Because to your point, that may leave an awful lot of people behind that we can't really afford to have in this country, nor do we want.
Well, I think the solution's threefold. First, we have to reshape how children are educated about manufacturing, catching them in grade school and letting them know what's offered. Then secondly, we have to have the people who are transitioning from those traditional jobs really receiving the training in a format that is short term. more technical in nature, better suited to our community colleges, and that's how you can transform and how we transition workers. And then thirdly, we have to think of education differently, where it simply isn't a college degree, it is technical know-how that can get you in the market, and then employers will then go out and fill in the blanks with where they want the specialized education.
Does technology play, and by technology I mean robotics and things like that, play a significant role here in terms of what's happening moving forward?
Absolutely. And that role, I think, sometimes awakens people to an offshore competition that they're not aware of. That is, it's not just cheap labor. Our offshore competition in certain parts of the world, they excel in automation. They have brand new factories. It's just not about cheap bodies. So if we're competing against that, we have to retool. We have to put forward an effort that is concentrated on really serious capital investment towards supporting those industries.
So Mike, has the makeup of your workforce changed in the past 10 years?
Absolutely. I happen to use documented workers, but I've tapped into a lot of our foreign workers for talent simply because, well, let's take this example. I may have someone arriving who's not credentialed in engineering in the United States, but may have an advanced degree in their home country. And I, as a small employer, and that's less than 100 people, can take advantage of that lack of credentialing and have that person working in my company for a short duration or a long-term duration. And I look at my accounting department. I have two folks with advanced degrees from Egypt and Pakistan. So I've seen the face of my workers change dramatically over the years because I saw I could get talent through those immigrants.
So Michael Pearson's workforce has changed. He seeks the talent. What does that say then to American workers who are fearful or being made to feel fear of not having a job because they're being, quote, replaced by foreign workers? That comes right back, I think, to where you were. And let's talk about that education.
Well, you're absolutely right. And that education for what we really need to address is not being addressed in this country. I can flat out tell you, the folks that even would qualify for entry-level positions are coming in ill-prepared to contribute in a technology-based manufacturing setting where at least a basic knowledge of math is necessary. And secondly, some of the soft skills that were encouraged while I was in elementary and grade school somehow have not fallen upon our teenagers coming out of high school.
And is that a function of this, and I don't want to get too far off a tangent, but is that a function of a failure of the education system? Or just not an understanding of changing resources and needs?
Well, I tend to think the failure can lie upon education and also how we're preparing kids for the world. It is more globally competitive, and you simply don't have the jobs that once existed where you could go and become a welder. But also, those welders were receiving solid basic education. We've fallen way off in terms of the talent that we're producing towards the middle and the bottom of our American students. We're still great at the top. I'll challenge anyone. Our PhDs and our advanced education in this country is excellent. It's what we're doing on the middle and towards the bottom that's falling.
Right, because not every kid is also, by the way, college bound, right? So we have to start identifying, I think, earlier, sort of directions. I know in Europe they tend to do that. They sort of develop as they go, and there's a series of tests that'll track kids for good careers, right? Maybe that's something we ought to be thinking about.
Germany's been very successful with that model. If you are a mechanic at a Mercedes-Benz plant, you're well respected. But the U.S. has struggled to understand. We still use antiquated terms like vocational education. And what we're really talking about is technical education.
So, Mike, with such a diverse workforce, are there any unique challenges to employee relations issues?
Absolutely. That's where a firm, you'll have unique legal issues that sometimes may pop up. You will have unique issues in terms of things like a break room, where the scent of various foods can trigger minor scuffles amongst employees. There's things you don't think about. But more importantly, you do hire people with that fire in the belly, and they find a way to be team members and make it happen.
Do you find that having a lot of folks from different backgrounds provides a strength in the way they approach problems?
Well, the unique problem-solving aspect of diversity will always benefit an organization, whether it's gender, whether it's race, ethnicity. Those different viewpoints do come together to provide different solutions. That's been proven. There's enough data to support it. I think what I also find is that we tend not to focus on issues that are not important. They're more goal-oriented, and sometimes limited conversational English is not necessarily a disadvantage.
Well,
it sounds like, Mike, you have an optimistic view of manufacturing when, if we can fix some of the educational challenges and appreciate the things that diversity and technology bring to us. So thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate it. Thank you all for listening. And again, join us at the conversation at www.theemployerchronicles.com or on Twitter at Employer Chronicles, CHRNCLS. Until next time.